की जाए।
So, today we're going to hear from about Jayananda. I imagine he's probably one of the first saints of ISKCON. Jayananda Prabhu, he died at a very young age, I believe, 38 years old. But at that time, he was quite old compared to devotees. I think most devotees at that time were in their 20s, mid-20s. So Jayananda Prabhu was kind of considered to be like an old man in those days. Although now we look back at it, and he was actually very, very young compared to what's happening now in our society. And he died at a very early age. He had a disease, cancer, lymphatic cancer, I believe it was. Very dedicated to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada appreciated him very much. We've read in previous years how Prabhupada actually cooked for him, forced Jayananda to eat more and more and more. Prabhupada was very anxious, very pleased to do that. So the relationship between Jayananda and Srila Prabhupada was very unique. Although Prabhupada had these kind of relationships with other devotees also, it wasn't just Jayananda. But today we're just remembering Jayananda Prabhu. So we're mentioning that. And Prabhupada did write a letter concerning Jayananda's disappearance. And I'd like to read that. A couple of other things, not too long, say maybe a few words. And if someone else has something they would like to add, you feel free to do so. And then we were going to ask Maheshwar Prabhu to come up and read to us pastimes with him and Jayananda Prabhu. And I'm sure all of you appreciate it very much. I don't think any of us have heard what Maheshwar Prabhu has to read today. So it'll be kind of a pleasant surprise. So I'll begin by reading a letter from His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Very important. I mean, if a person like Prabhupada is going to write about one of his disciples, very unique. So, this is dated May 5th, 1977. Dear Jayananda, please accept my blessings. I am feeling very intensely your separation. In 1967, you joined me in San Francisco. You were driving my car and chanting Hare Krishna. You were the first man to give me some contribution, $6,000, for printing my Bhagavad Gita. After that, you have rendered very favorable service to Krishna in different ways. I so hope at the time of your death you were remembering Krishna as such. You have been promoted to the eternal association of Krishna. If not, if you had any tinge of material desire, you have gone to the celestial kingdom to live with the demigods for many thousands of years and enjoy the most opulent life of material existence. From there, you can promote yourself to the spiritual world. But even if one fails to promote himself to the spiritual world, at that time he comes down again on the surface of this globe and takes birth in a big family like a yogi's or brahmana or an aristocratic family where there is again chance of reviving Krishna consciousness. But as you were hearing Krishna kirtan, I am sure that you were directly promoted to Krishna loka. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoviti tatvataha tektvadiham punarjama naitimam itiso arjuna. Krishna has done a great favor to you not to continue your diseased body, and he has given you a suitable place for your service. Thank you very much. Your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Hi. So, we know that he went back to Krishna Loka. That's amazing. It is the goal of life, especially those of us who are practicing Krishna consciousness. We understand the importance of that. And he was blessed directly by his spiritual master, the Acharya of ISKCON, and a pure devotee of the Lord. So, very unique. I'd like to read another letter. This is Prabhupada writing to Jayananda again, kind of a sweet letter. And this was on December 1st, 1973. My dear Jayananda, please accept my blessings. I am in receipt of your letter dated November 13th, 1973. I was very happy to hear from you. I am always thinking of you and praying to Krishna for your advancement in Krishna consciousness. That you are engaged in street Sankirtan in San Francisco is fully approved by me. That you are feeling more and more enthusiasm by doing this is quite natural, as Sankirtan is our life and soul. My Guru Maharaj used to say, quote, one who has got life, he can preach, end of quote. Yes, I remember the old days in San Francisco. Krishna has been so kind upon me to have sent so many sincere disciples to help me push on this movement on behalf of my Guru Maharaj. You continue with your program there in San Francisco, always strictly keeping our principles, and Krishna will bless you with greater and greater realization of the importance of this movement. I am dependent upon you, my older disciples, to carry it on. Please offer my blessings to your good wife, Treyi Devidasi, and thank her on my behalf for the three nice drawings of Krishna Leela. Also, please thank Bhava Tarini Devidasi for her drawing of Gopal Krishna. So far, how she can serve me, the best service is to chant Hare Krishna always and spread it to every town and village. I hope this meets you well. Your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Wow, that's a kind of like sweet letter to Jayananda. Just read a couple of more things to kind of set the mood for Jayananda. This is Jayananda's beginnings in Krishna consciousness. And this is for the benefit of those devotees that don't quite know much about Jayananda Prabhu. Jayananda was the all-American boy, handsome, strong, intelligent, born in a more than middle-class family. Jayananda took a degree in mechanical engineering from Ohio State University. With a background like that, it is surprising that Jayananda ended up as a cab driver in San Francisco. Karandar once asked him why he didn't get a better paying job. He said, quote, I didn't fit in with the upper class crowd, he said, end of quote. Always introspective in nature, Jayananda felt empty and unsatisfied within himself during his college years. He would often say that he was never happy before joining Krishna consciousness. His depression was almost suicidal when in 1967, he read a small article in a San Francisco paper about an Indian Swami who had come to the Bay Area to propagate the chanting of the names of God. Jayananda recalled feeling a ray of hope when he read that article, thinking the Swami may have something to offer. Jayananda made up his mind to attend the Swami's lectures. Srila Prabhupada's early lectures in the Bay Area were mostly attended by hippies, and Jayananda was one of the only straight people there. Jayananda later recalled that, quote, I wasn't much of a religionist, but I was attracted to Srila Prabhupada, end of quote. He was especially fond of attending the early morning lectures because at that hour, most of the hippies would be in bed. On some occasions, Jayananda would be the only guest listening to Srila Prabhupada speak from the Bhagavatam. I thought that was pretty remarkable. It was Prabhupada giving a class, and the only person there was Jayananda. That's pretty unique. Amazing that you get that one-on-one with Srila Prabhupada in the early days. Srila Prabhupada was always fond of Jayananda, and sometimes he would invite his budding disciple to take prasad with him in his room. Srila Prabhupada would cook prasad and serve me, Jayananda recalled. He didn't say anything. He just kept feeding me, and I just kept eating. End of quote. Jayananda soon donated his life savings of $6,000 to Srila Prabhupada to help His Divine Grace print the Bhagavad Gita as it is. As more and more devotees joined ISKCON in the Bay Area, Jayananda continued to work as a cab driver and supported the temple by contributing all of his earnings. Jayananda Prabhu ki jai. So, would anyone like to say anything else? Something, some special pastime with Jayananda Prabhu? Nakama? Yeah, get a mic, please. Thank you. We do this to keep alive the memory of devotees in Krishna consciousness and their relationship with Srila Prabhupada, to warrant the fact that this is a personal movement. We try our best to be as personal as possible and to remember Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis that have done wonderful service for Srila Prabhupada. So this is why we do this, to remember their activities and their pastimes.
First time I met Jayananda Prabhu was in San Francisco, and we had come down from...
Is that microphone on? It doesn't sound like it's on.
They can't. Haribo. The first time I met Jayananda Prabhu was in San Francisco, when we had come down from Denver for Rath Yatra.
Yeah.
And our first experience with him was that as soon as we landed, he had this such an attractive nature that you'd want to help with whatever he was doing. So he was getting volunteers to help with building in the cart and helping at the site over at... what was the name of the park? The Meadows?
Yeah, something like that.
Shannon Meadows? Sharon Meadows. After a full day of service, he always had, I remember, tons of prasadam, especially halava.
Yeah.
For all the devotees. And I remember going back one evening, and Jayananda was, and many devotees who have had some experience with, a very large person, very large hands. And I was watching him in the men's ashram, in the bathroom, shaving this young bhakta's head. And it was just, it was so... I don't know what the word would be, extraordinary or attractive or just so fun to watch him with these big hands shaving this young devotee's head and preaching to him at the same time. He was so so friendly and... that was in 73. And then after that, the few times that we saw him was in New York when he was ill, when Srila Prabhupada visited there the last time in 76. And a couple other times when he was on Radha Damodar, on one of the Radha Damodar buses, he would, we'd sometimes bump into him. But he was such a... such a lovable personality. Although he was a big bodied person, he was really so gentle. It impressed me so much. Jayananda Prabhu ki jai.
Yeah, Haribo. He wasn't so much of a charismatic person. He was just like so down to earth and lovable. So I agree with you. He wasn't like some person that was jumping around, hitting the ceiling. And he was just a very normal, natural person who had a big heart, and like you said, he actually wanted to always engage everyone. It didn't matter who you were. And actually, some of his friends, we probably it would probably be bewildering to us if you knew some of the people that, I'll read this part here. Once near the Rathyatrakart work site, Jayananda invited Keshava to step inside a bar and meet some friends of his. They walked inside and immediately some 25 faces looked up and smiled brightly. Someone said, "Oh, this must be your friend you were telling us about, the temple president." They presented the two devotees with a sack full of vegetarian groceries, which they had chipped in together to buy. So, obviously, Jayananda would go to every place, every nook, cranny, and corner to collect for Lord Jagannath's festival. And these individuals in this bar, they were all his friends. And he could actually engage them in Krishna's service, and they all chipped in and bought groceries, for vegetarian groceries. So this is Jayananda. Not only did the devotees love him, but even non-devotees that were probably of very low character in terms of being in the bar. What's that? So it was pretty incredible. And what Nakama said about the work site, yeah. I remember we went together there. And we would go to that work site. And one of the things, it's a strange phenomenon, but one of the things that I remember so vividly there, just kind of, I don't know why I do it, just kind of shows where I'm at. But he kind of like authorized the drinking of 7-Up in those days. Because, you know, as devotees, you didn't even think you could drink like a pop, you know, soda pop. And then he would buy like case of 7-Up. And I thought to myself, all right, there is some sense pleasure in Krishna consciousness. So he was cool like that. And if you were a new devotee, he was so cool like that, that he really made you feel like at home and that you really did the right thing of joining Krishna consciousness. That was Jayananda. A totally cool guy. And you should know, in those days, for some reason or other, I don't remember why, but I think I kind of like went for it, you didn't really trust anybody over 30. You know, and Jayananda was already like probably about 35 years old. And so it was kind of like, you know, wow, he's kind of an old guy, but he's pretty cool. He knows where it's at. Anyone else like to say something? Yes. We'll do this for a couple of more minutes and then we'll turn over to Maheshwar Prabhu.
In 1974, I used to live in Seattle, and I wasn't a devotee yet. I was just coming to the temple a few times, and they talked me into going to Rathyatra. They said, "Prabhuda's there. Prabhuda's coming." And so I drove down to Rathyatra, and I went to the temple about 2 weeks before it started, and I was taking morning prasadam, and Jayananda serving everybody out. He was so humble. Then he asked us if we could help him with the cart. So I got to drive with him in the truck and the devotees out to the Rathyatra site, where we worked on the cart. And he'd always be chanting. He'd always be giving devotees nice prasadam. Sometimes he prepared himself. And one new person came, and he was like hammering a nail. And Jayananda said, "You're the best nail pounder I've ever seen." So that was very nice. And I ended up actually joining the temple when I wasn't going to, I think maybe because of his association, for 2 weeks. And the day after Rathyatra, I ended up joining the movement. And then I got to serve Prabhupada in India. And I was serving him when he got the news that Jayananda left his body in his room in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada started to cry. I think Jayananda was his favorite disciple. So that was very emotional. Jai Jayananda.
Hari Bol. Yes, Archita Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Jayananda Prabhu had the same effect even on non-devotees, as you said. Anyone who's involved in getting permits for doing Rathyatra, no, it's not an easy job. Generally speaking, the non-devotees are dead set against us, and they try to impede us from getting necessary permits or putting on our street festivals like this. So in New York, it was no different, but Jayananda was so personable and likable with the officials that he had to approach in New York to get permits to do the Rathyatra. When there was this one particular lady that he would deal with on a regular basis. And when he passed away and she heard, when somebody else came to get the permit, and she said, well, where is Jayananda? And he said, well, he passed away. So she started crying.
Yeah.
So he had that same effect on devotees, non-devotees alike. And we know from the prayers of the six Goswamis that Dira Dira Janakpriyo Priyakaro Nirmatsaro and Pujito, that when one is actually a devotee of the Lord, then those who are nice people like them, and those who even are not nice, the ruffians, they also like them. Because they know this person is harmless and wishes me well. So they don't, generally speaking, they're attracted to those who are pure devotees of the Lord. So in this way, Jayananda had an effect. There's also another story that Mukunda Maharaj told me, that when Jayananda was in a hospital, practically he couldn't eat anything. And you know, hospital, they want to feed you all kinds of stuff that you don't want to eat anyway. So he asked one devotee if he could do a favor, and the devotee said, sure. And he said, bring me some pakoras. So they brought him a whole tub. You know, this business of using tub to serve prasadam, this has been going on since time immemorial. They brought this huge tub full of pakoras, and he ate all of them. Here he is, he's dying of leukemia, he's in the hospital, and he ate a whole tub of pakoras. So this was Jayananda. He wasn't concerned about, you know, recommendation of the doctors and whatnot. He wanted prasadam, and he ate a whole tub of pakoras.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
It says here that he was as much at home with the Italians at the produce market as with the brahmacharis in the temple. He would make friends on street sankirtan, and they would often come up to him and say, hey, where have you been? Once the devotees were approached by a staggering drunk in San Francisco. The drunk looked at him, at his robes, and asked the devotee, hey, where's my old friend Jayananda? I think the purport of that all is that it just goes to show you he was very mature in his Krishna consciousness. He could do this because he wasn't attracted to any of this activities, these simple activities. And he didn't really look at it in terms of that, oh, I wish I could do that. And when you have a desire, it's really difficult to do that. If you're really desiring to take intoxication or having sex or gambling, it's very rare that you can approach and you know, communicate and associate with people like that for fear of becoming attracted to it. But Jayananda was so mature in his Krishna conscious life that he could work with individuals of this caliber and without any tinge of desire. He didn't care about it. That wasn't what he wanted. He wanted just to give them Krishna consciousness. And you can see here, that's really what happened. They became very attracted to him as a devotee, not like a fellow comrade in simple activity.
We heard how from Gauri Prabhu, that Gauri Das Prabhu, that Jayananda was very dear to Srila Prabhupada. One morning in New York, when Srila Prabhupada was giving Bhagavatam class, Jayananda would sit against the pillar there. He was suffering from his illness. And he would doze off. This was every day. I mean, it was for the whole 4 or 5 days that Srila Prabhupada was there in New York. And he would just slump over and sleep. And the devotees would look around, and they're wondering, who is this? Why is he sleeping during Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavatam class? And Prabhupada said, no, stop it. Just leave him alone. I want him to sleep. But just the fact that he was there, Srila Prabhupada was so kind to him.
That's a nice story. I remember that. I also saw Jayananda in New York in the latter part of 76 and 77, actually by 76. And I was there doing some book distribution, and I was amazed because I used to know him from being in San Francisco doing that kind of service. And then when I saw him in New York, he was actually heading up a Sankirtan team. And what was really amazing is that it was a Sankirtan team of Matajis. And he probably had a good 10 of them. And they were really fired up. They were doing huge, just taking them out every day on book distribution. And they were doing huge. And I just, I had to ask him, I just remember you this and that. Like, what are you doing here now? How's this? And he said, that I was here in New York and there were a lot of ladies that wanted to go out and book distribution. And in New York, it's very dangerous to go out alone or even as a couple. It's very dangerous in New York, riding the subway, different places of New York. So I said, nobody wanted to do it, so I just volunteered myself. And then he said, I did it because I know how dear it was to Srila Prabhupada. And then he reminded me that he gave some money to Prabhupada to print his first Gita. So I think that was his surrendered nature, that at one point you thought he was just Mr. Rathiatra, just absorbed in that activity. And the next thing you know, he's, taking care of the book distribution and helping devotees go out on book distribution, and just completely just did it, and it was successful. Or previous to that, he was the kind of person that would do the Pasadam run, Boga run, go out and do Baita Boga. And in those days, we had a problem in what to do with the sacred leftovers, like leftover Pasadam and garlands. And devotees, we didn't know what to do in those days. It was just bewildering to us. In India, you could just go to the Ganga and you could just put it in the Ganga. So we didn't know what to do. So we thought the best thing to do was just to throw it in the local river. And unfortunately, they got caught. And Jayananda was the one that would do that. He'd get up very early in the morning, dark. And at dark, take these barrels of prasadam, mahaprasad, and that was not eaten, leftover. And he would take it to the riverbank and they would dump it. They finally got caught. And after he got caught, then it was spread around ISKCON. Don't do this anymore. It's not good for our reputation.
And much of that service that he did in New York in those days was out of a wheelchair.
Yeah, that's right, out of a wheelchair. You're right. I forgot about that. He was in a wheelchair. You're right. So this is Jayananda Prabhu, a really great soul, very dear to Srila Prabhupada, and very dear to ISKCON. We want to appreciate such a nice Vaishnava. I think what's really important here is what kind of a great Mahatma he was in terms of his surrender to Krishna. There's just conception that at that particular time, it was a conception that a person in a white body from the Western world, there was no way in any way that they could become a devotee, that they could actually go back to Godhead. And Srila Prabhupada proved that wrong. That was really amazing. That in those days, it was very prominent, actually. If you're a white person, you would go to India, and even an ordinary person would think that you're just a fool. You're not a devotee. You're not a Vaishnava. You're just some malecha. Some yavana from Chicago or New York City or Los Angeles. You're not a devotee. They wouldn't see us that way, and they would think that it's impossible. When we used to go to Vrindavan in those early days, you see some of the local people looking at us like we were like Martians, like you were just complete weirdos. And there's no way that you could be a devotee. Absolutely not. And this is the glory of Srila Prabhupada. Jayananda was one of the pinnacle shining lamps of Srila Prabhupada's desire to prove that this is not just some caste, only those that are born of a particular culture or country can only become a devotee of Krishna, a sincere, pure devotee of Krishna. And Prabhupada proved that wrong. And today, whatever is there in India in terms of how devotees are being reciprocated with was because of Srila Prabhupada. And what he actually was able to accomplish here with Jayananda. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So there is a chance for all of us to stay. Stick it out. Anyone else? Sir G, would you like to say anything, Prabhu?
And we were the big Sankirtan party and traveling Sankirtan in Seattle. So when we came to San Francisco, we were a little puffed up. And I just remember we got our 8 chickpeas and 1 scoop of khichdi. And maybe a scoop of halva on our wax paper plate. And I asked Gopeshwar, who's this guy serving out? You know, because he was all over the place. And he said, that's Jayananda. And we had all heard, even by then, of Jayananda, and I was amazed that here's the president of the temple. He was the president of the San Francisco temple, which in those days was a lot of devotees in 73. And he was counting out the chickpeas to put on all of us lowly bhaktas, new devotees' plates and visiting devotees' plates. And I was very moved that, yes, it was actually true. This guy's amazing. He was totally amazing personality. And later he became Tamal Krishna Maharaj's bus leader and was towards the end there, I guess it was 76, 75, No, must have been 77, that he was the bus leader, and he would serve all the devotees and ran the whole bus program for Radha Damodar, one of the buses.
Yeah. Very nice. Thank you. Banapata Prabhu.
I've probably most devotees have heard me say this before, but when I joined San Francisco Temple, Jayananda was heading up the daily Harinam party down on Market and Powell. And, you know, especially as a new bhakta, going down to Market and Powell was not a very pleasant experience. It was cold, it was windy, and... you know, it wasn't at all attractive. But with Jayananda, I must have gone out with Jayananda for the first, I don't know, 5-6 months I was a devotee there. And he made it, he went out of his way to make it so pleasant for every devotee and make everyone feel so wanted, because he was just so, he was, like you say, he was such an advanced soul. But, you know, he was so incredibly humble at the same time. And I've mentioned this before, but I'll mention again, he was so much into prasadam, not just taking prasadam, but so much into, you know, making sure devotees had enough prasadam, that every day we had a huge bucket of Simply Wonderfuls we give out to people. And you know, devotees who were in a little anxiety about going out in the morning, Jayananda would stuff them with Simply Wonderfuls. He had a rule that anybody could eat as many Simply Wonderfuls as they want between the temple and when we got out. And devotees were literally taking advantage of that. Some devotees would eat like 20, 30 Simply Wonderfuls on the way and like stagger out of the van on Harinam. And Jayananda used to lead the Harinam and chant and play drum for hours and hours and hours. His enthusiasm was contagious, and it was just unlimited. And so, you know, he was like that. Any kind of activity, you were there with Jayananda, you know, as Naikama Prabhu was mentioned, he would make everyone feel so welcome and so happy to be there just by his you know, is a full, is magnanimous personality. Yeah.
Thank you. All right. One last thing, and I'm going to try to paraphrase this because I wasn't there personally, but I've heard several times. I might make a little bit of a mistake, but Jayananda did leave his body around Mangalarti time. He was in the sewing room. They had a place for him there in bed. And maybe like 2 or 3 days before he passed away from this world, they were building the Rathyatra carts out in the big parking lot. And when he came to L.A., he was ill. He was very ill. One time there was devotees taking him for like a little stroll down on Venice Beach in a wheelchair. And he saw the boardwalk there, you know, where the boardwalk is, where the carts pass, you know, Venice Beach area. He saw that and he said, wow, this would be a perfect place for Rathyatra. It was just his idea. And he came back and he told Rameshwar, and Rameshwar agreed. And this was about, oh, I don't know, maybe five, six months or a little bit longer till Rathyatra. So they went on a complete marathon, and they found this devotee, Lalitanath. And Lalitanath was quite expert at all these kind of things, construction. So Jayananda gave him the plans, the idea, and how to do this. So Lalitanath, Rameshwar, they pushed, and they were getting it done. And so 3 or 4 days before his birthday, Jayananda was in his room and he was bedridden. And they tried to get him out to the big parking lot here. That's where the carts were being built. They tried to get him out to the car parking lot. Surprise, birthday party. And that was in 77. Probably in just, you know, April, May, like that. And so they tried to get him out to the parking lot. And he said, no, I don't want to go. He was feeling ill. He said, no, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. No, no, we need you. It's an emergency, this, that, and everything. He said, okay, let's just get this over with. In other words, he knew that it was going to be a birthday party. They tried to, like, surprise him, but he knew what they were up to. He says, okay, let's just get this over with. So they brought him out to the parking lot, and they flew in Jayananda's parents to be there for this really tearful birthday party. They made a huge cake, Rathyatra cart cake, huge cake for him. And it was very tearful. And he was very ill. His body was swollen and puffed up full of fluid, and it was very embarrassing. But still he did it, and the devotees were completely just crying. You couldn't believe it. And the carts are being built, and everything was amazing. So we owe a lot here from New Dwarka to Jayananda Prabhu for this amazing vision of seeing a Rathyatra procession down at Venice Beach. So this year when we rumble down that particular boardwalk, just try to remember that this was by the service of a very sincere, pure devotee of the Lord, Jayananda Prabhu. And this is the potency of a fully surrendered devotee, that when they want something, they can actually get it. And this is Jayananda. He really wanted this, and he inspired other devotees to accomplish that goal. So here we owe him a big debt for his sincere desire and his vision to see Lord Jagannath Baladev Subhadra rumble down Venice Beach Boardwalk. Jayananda Prabhu ki jai. All right, so now we'll turn over to Maheshwar Prabhu, who will read some little nectar to us about Jayananda Prabhu.
First of all, I'd like to thank Savas for inviting me to come speak to such a nice assembly of devotees. And I'd also like to equally thank all of you for keeping this temple running. it's an oasis in Los Angeles, and it doesn't go on without the service that all of you are doing. So very much like to thank you for that. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasaya Bhutare Srimanti Bhaktivedanta Swamini Dinamine. Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Vicharane Nivashesha Sunyavati Pashkata Desha Tarane. Panchakalpa Thruvischa Kripa Sindhuvyeva Chapititanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. We got to go higher? Okay. It's got to be. Yeah, there we go. Okay. Yep. Okay, so the way this kind of came together, a couple of years ago, I invited Brigupati to come out and speak at the Janmasthami Festival that we have in Ojai. And he actually took advantage of the opportunity, and he brought his motorhome, and he did Sankirtan for a week prior to that. And every night, we would get together and take prasadam, and we would share these little stories, Sankirtan stories and so forth. And one of the evenings, I told him this story about the night before Rath Yatra in New York, 1976, which I had shared with people, but I just didn't realize how extraordinary it really was until I shared it with him. And he was saying, oh, Prabhu, you got to come tell the devotees the story in Los Angeles. So that's what I'm going to do today. I'm going to share this story with you. Before I start, I have some things here that I wanted to pass around. I only made two copies. Somebody could come get these. They may not make any sense until I'm done with this story, but I thought it would be good. And there's two for the ladies, too. And just as I'm speaking, pass it around, take a look at it. By the time I'm done, it'll all become clear what you're looking at. So I actually wrote this down because I realize it's probably something that's worth putting down on paper. So I'm just going to read it. Hopefully it'll be keep your attention. Episode 1. The title is the Historic New York 1976 Rath Yatra Parade. This is actually the story of what happened the night before the Rath Yatra Parade. I don't know how many people. Sounds like a lot of the devotees were here that evening. And a lot of the things that some of the devotees just mentioned, you're going to hear me kind of echoing it in this story in terms of some of the qualities that Jayananda had. So, episode 1, what is a Rath cart? I was tossed into the frenzy of Rath Yatra construction 3 days prior to the now quite famous parade that went down Fifth Avenue in the summer of 1976. Srila Prabhupada attended that public event with much satisfaction, but that three-cart parade almost didn't happen. Shortly after the devotees acquired the famous 13-story temple on 55th Street, it was decided that the temple room would be designed to recreate the intricately designed historic Radha Govinda temple facade in Vrindavan, India. When I arrived, each of the parts were being expertly crafted by a crew of talented sculptors, but nobody had figured out how all of the individual parts would be held together and suspended in front of the altar without falling down. I had studied industrial design in the University of Kansas, so when I arrived, I was assigned to the task of figuring out how it would all be assembled and suspended in the air. Meanwhile, in January 1976, Jayananda had started with a crew of helpers to begin the construction of the Rath carts, which with the intention that they would be used for that summer for the big parade. Jayananda apparently felt that because of my background, I might be able to help him resolve some design details on the Rath carts, even though I had never been to Rath Yatra parade. Didn't know what the word meant, or had even seen a Rath cart, what to speak of build one. Nonetheless, Jayananda would periodically consult with me a few times over the months during the construction of the carts to see what my suggestions were. I must confess that most of the time I could not grasp what he was describing to me because of my utter lack of experience with anything he would inquire about. I couldn't even imagine a parade float with wheels bigger than my six-foot profile. So I can't really say I contributed much to these mini engineering consulting sessions. All I really did was offer a few insignificant words of encouragement, confirming what Jayananda had envisioned all along.
I was flattered that he seemed to appreciate my counsel because I was so new and he was so highly regarded as a senior devotee. So it was easy to offer him a whole lot of genuine respect, but all I could really do is encourage him to press on confidently. We would always end those cherished talks mutually agreeing that Lord Jagannath would give him the intelligence and everything would get done well. Episode 2, Jayananda's super excellent character. Jayananda worked diligently with the Roth crew for long hours for several months. The cutting and welding of 8 new steel wheels with an 8-foot diameter had never been done before, and it was a lot of work. To this day, I don't know of any other ISKCON Roth cart that has 8-foot wheels. The ones that we use here in Los Angeles, I think, are 7.5 feet. Subhadra's cart was shipped from Chicago and did not require any new wheels. The crew worked so diligently, the rest of the temple members did not see much of them. Occasionally, Jayananda would arrive late to the Sunday feast with Jambavan Das Prabhu, one of his loyal assistants. They were like two huge demigods who descended into the back utility room to eat their feast much later than most devotees. At that time, both of these big men were strong and in their prime. They would use multiple half-gallon milk containers for drinking cups, one filled with nectar and the other filled with sweet rice, and they ate off 3 plates at a time. Often one was completely filled with nothing but just pakoras, while the other plates were filled with rice and sabji, respectively. When they sat down to eat, it was like Lord Balaram and Bhima coming home with a hunger that could not be satisfied, even if they ate all of Mount Meru. The parade was scheduled to go down Fifth Avenue on Sunday, July 18, 1976. As that date got closer, Jayananda became anxious that he would not be able to complete the construction of the 3 chariots in time. So he requested Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Adi Keshava Swami for more men to help. Wednesday evening, prior to the Sunday of the parade, these 2 senior devotees instructed me to redirect the temple construction crew to join the Rath Yatra crew. The next morning, our team of artisans marched up to the abandoned train station on west side of Manhattan at 60th Street, where the carts were rising up from the asphalt parking lot. Jayananda was extremely happy to see us, and his enthusiasm was contagious. He immediately gave each of us appropriate tasks to do. All the while, he repeatedly expressed his sincere gratitude for our assistance. He was a dynamic leader. What soon became evident was that he worked harder than everyone else, took care of his crew, and would never ask anyone to do something that he himself was not prepared to do if the need arise. Episode 3, Watermelon Prasadam, anyone? Jayananda's concern about completing the carts by Sunday morning subsided with the additional help. Everything seemed to get back on schedule, and the mood was jovial and exciting. Lord Jagannath was going to rule Manhattan on Sunday, and we were all going to be there dancing, chanting, and feasting sumptuously. Saturday afternoon, someone showed up with a sizable watermelon and gave it to Jayananda to share with the crew. It's not clear where they got it from, but they did state that it hadn't been offered yet. Jayananda didn't waste any time. He immediately cradled the watermelon in both hands, squatted real low, and then hurled it up into the air like an exploding cannonball. When the watermelon crested it at about 30 feet, Jayananda bellowed out, "Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu." When the green cannonball came crashing down onto the parking lot, it exploded into red shrapnel. Jayananda immediately collected the large chunks and began personally distributing them to all the devotees who watched at this rather unusual spontaneous offering with amazement. As the evening got closer, we finally got the heavy canopy in place on top of Balaram's cart, and we were anxious to work out the details with the raising mechanism. This was, in fact, one of the things that Jayananda had come to speak to me about at 5 a.m. one morning when I was chanting my rounds. I understood that he wanted to lift a tent-like structure, but because I had never seen a Rothkart before, I really did not feel qualified to give him any advice at all. So like the other times we departed, agreeing that Jayananda would give, that Lord Jagannath would give him the intelligence to figure it all out. Now that I had an opportunity to study the carts, I could observe the mechanism he described, and it all came into perspective. I, too, was getting very excited to see how it was all coming together. Episode 4, A Sigh of Relief. Jayananda had slowed down enough where we were able to chat a bit as we approached the final stage of completing the chariots. We backed away from the carts to visualize what they were going to look like as they rolled down Fifth Avenue. Jayananda was a relentless captain who forged ahead for 6 months, overcoming all sorts of obstacles. On this triumphant evening before the parade, the great devotee of Lord Jagannath, Jayananda Prabhu, took a rare moment with me to review all that had been accomplished, and it was good. It was outrageously glorious, and we all felt good about being part of it. The six-month marathon would culminate the following day when Srila Prabhupada joined us for the biggest Rath Yatra ever to occur outside of Jagannath Puri. After months of planning, all three carts were manifesting with all the glory of grand spiritual pageantry. New York had never seen anything like this before, and we were fired up. While we were enjoying this moment, the crew continued to complete the tasks they were given. Ropes were attached, bolts were tightened, and the final painting was getting done. The canopy mechanism was being tested, and although I had hardly done anything, Jayananda embraced my friendship as if I was one of the guys who was there welding the wheels with him when they started in the freezing month of January. Balaram's canopy was going up, and we were all marveling at how spiritually seductive it was. A tower of blue and red against the dismal background of a train station that was now just a dump for old cars, broken bottles, rusted steel, and crumpled beer cans. Balaram's canopy was now fully extended, and it stood majestically 40 feet into the air for about 3 minutes. And then it happened. Episode 5. Lord Vayu's challenge. An unexpected gust of wind came rushing down the Hudson River. It blew over the top of the train station roof, right where we staged the construction of the carts, and it caught Balaram's huge canopy like a sail. The problem was, the sail was not on a boat. It was on a two-ton Roth cart, which was blocked into place, and the forces were too much for the center's supporting telescope to endure. The metal fatigued and the whole top of Balaram's cart came crashing down onto the ground with a thundering sound. We all gasped with dismay. Jayananda watched the whole thing with big eyes and was standing speechless, temporarily paralyzed. Nobody was hurt, but in about 3 seconds, the towering temple of bright blue had been radically transformed into what appeared to be an old crumpled shop rag lying amidst splintered wood and tangled rope. The long and arduous labor of love that had begun in the dirty basement of the old Brooklyn BBT bindery building last winter had a completely unexpected encounter with tremendous misfortune. We all turned to Jayananda. "What should we do, Captain?" There was a long, quiet pause as we looked on at what had just happened. The first thing Jayananda said was, "That cart is out of the parade. We will just have to make modifications. and have a two-cart parade. He then went on to apologize to everyone for what he obviously felt was a terrible mistake on his part. And it was clear that he was really having a hard time accepting what happened, while also being looped with the now additional burden of having to decide what to do next. He was a man and a great leader, but this was completely uncharted territory. Jayananda did not shed tears, but it was evident that his soul was crying. This was supposed to be his triumphant moment, but instead, in one insignificant moment, Lord Vayu decided to mess with everyone's head. Needless to say, the mood immediately changed. The satisfaction of triumph and success we were all basking in just moments before were literally blown away and replaced with heartbreak. Jayananda felt that the failure of Balaram's cart was his responsibility. And he was absorbing the experience as a tremendous failure. I was also overwhelmed by the ominous mood that had quickly set in. I kept thinking, what a waste. Jainan had worked on this huge parade float for so long, and now he was ready to ditch the whole thing because the top was no good. I didn't really understand what Rathyatra was at the time. So like an innocent little kid, I approached Jayananda and naively appealed to him. Why can't we just use Balaram's cart the way it is without the canopy? It's still quite spectacular with the 8-foot wheels. Jayananda looked at me like I was nuts. I later realized that what I was asking could be compared to approaching Michelangelo and saying, look, I realize the head of your marble carving of David just broke off and crashed all over the floor. But the rest of the sculpture is still pretty fantastic. So why not just take what's left of his torso to the premiere tomorrow and unveil the statue of David without his head? Jayananda would have nothing to do with such a crazy idea. No, he insisted, Balaram's cart is out. He kept saying things like, I just don't have the time, manpower, or material to fix Balaram's cart. We still need to get Jagannath's and Subhadra's cart done. There is so much we still need to do. Balaram's cart is out. It's too dangerous. We must modify the other cart so the same thing doesn't happen to them. Oh my, how are we going to do all this? Balaram will have to ride with Subhadra. What a mess. I'm sorry. That's what we will have to do. We have to make a space on Subhadra's cart so Balaram could ride with her. Balaram's cart is out. Episode 6. The parade must go on with just two carts. I was new to Rathyatra. I hadn't been part of the original team, which had been working steadily for the last 6 months, and I felt really out of place to say anything at that point. But I could see how terribly disappointed Jayananda was. And he made it very clear that he could only do so much in the next 12 hours. So when Balaram's cart splashed all over the parking lot, Jayananda instinctively shifted to damage control. His brain immediately started focusing on preserve what we have. It was the right choice because he simply did not have the time to complete the two good carts, which still required some minor work, and now also had to be modified so that they would not face the same disastrous fate. Jayananda was rightfully concerned. If this were to happen tomorrow with the other carts during the parade, when there would be thousands of people around, somebody would get hurt. He wasn't going to let that happen. Srila Prabhupada had inspected the carts the day before, so as far as everyone at the temple was concerned, everything was fine, and the parade was going to proceed ahead without a flaw. However, within minutes after Balaram's top fell, a whole sea of devotees who had just arrived from other cities came down from the 55th Street Temple, hoping to see the carts ready to go in their glory. Needless to say, things got very chaotic when it was evident that Balaram's cart had gone splunk, and this just created even more distress in Jayananda's heart. He was apologizing to everyone while correctly insisting that safety had to be our first priority. He was terribly disappointed, but he would not compromise on anything that might put someone at risk of getting hurt. While Jayananda was doing the best he could to send a clear message back to the temple about how we would have to cut the parade down from 3 carts to a 2-cart procession, I began surveying what had happened more carefully. I felt Jayananda's evident pain, but I was not burdened with the emotional angst that he was clearly experiencing. After all, he was the sole fulcrum point for all of the decision-making, and he was ultimately responsible for safe completion of those 3 huge Roth carts. Within seconds, he had been suddenly thrust into crisis mode, regardless of the fact that he was exhausted and needed to sleep for a week. Episode 7, Surveying the Damage. I figured out that if I could not make any tangible suggestions, it would be better to just get out of the way and let Jayananda do what he did best and simply lead us. Barlam's cart looked like it had been beheaded, but I wasn't ready to walk away from it without completely studying what had happened. I was not the one who was immediately swamped with the new concerns by the abrupt change in events. I enjoyed the liberty of just being a helper, so in that way, I was perhaps in a better position to seek out and consider other alternatives we may have other than the immediate reaction of completely abandoning Balaram's cart altogether. Yes, it certainly looked like a huge mess all over the parking lot. There were tangled ropes, shattered hoop rings, twisted cables, and a mangled crown assembly which broke into splinters when it toppled from about 40 feet in the air. In the few days I had an opportunity to work on the carts, I gleaned enough information to understand the basic concept for holding the canopy up. Despite how massive and permanent the structure might appear to the public, it was assembled like a big box kite. The canopy was like a square sail that was suspended on hoop frames that hung from one central crown piece that got thrust up into the air by a multi-stage expanding telescoping tower. I'm not the type of person to walk away from 6 months of hard work because of an untimely setback, and I took Lord Vayu's intercession as a personal challenge. Supersoul was pushing me to see if there was any possibility of piecing Balaram's cart back together from what was still left, albeit smashed all over the parking lot. The canopy was tangled in the ropes, but it did not appear to be ripped. The ropes were twisted, but could be untangled. The hoops were just 2x2 wooden pieces that could be either replaced or perhaps lashed together and then glued. The top frame could also be nailed and lashed with glue. Yes, it would be a lot of busy work, probably an all-night surge, but if we had some extra hands, it seemed we might be able to rebuild the top structure by the time the sun hit the morning horizon. Episode 8, 2 Conditions. When the word got out about our misfortune, the stream of devotees from the temple increased even more. When I approached Jayananda, he was explaining to everyone what had happened and how we would proceed the next day. I managed to pull him away long enough to ask if he would allow me to try to repair Balaram's cart. At first, he had a hard time comprehending of what I was offering to do. In his head, he had already completely dismissed the idea of Balaram's cart being in the parade, and now, just a few minutes later, he was already fully focused on Plan B. His primary concern now was the strength of Jagannath's telescope, which had been built as an exact duplicate of the one which had just completely failed on Balaram's cart. Jayananda was noticeably very nervous about the possibility of Jagannath's equally huge canopy also catching a strong, unexpected wind and crashing down during the parade, where someone would surely get hurt. Although I did not fully understand why Jayananda trusted my judgment, but it was evident from the numerous impromptu consultations meetings we had leading up to this moment under less stressful circumstances that he did. I think that was the only reason why he was willing to stop long enough to listen to my proposal while he was clearly absorbed in a flood of other compelling distractions, responsibilities, and emotional turmoil. So when he finally understood what I was proposing, he stopped to think about it. He did not dwell on it for long. In his next breath, he said he would allow me to proceed with my plan to rebuild Balaram's cart into the night under two conditions. The first was that I could not ask for any of the existing crew members that were on the site at the time to help me. He made it clear that he was relying on all of them to work with him through the night to get the other two surviving carts fully ready for the parade. The second condition was I could not drag him off focus from what he was doing. He didn't want me to distract him with a million questions because he felt he wouldn't be able to get everything done on time if he got involved in the rebuild of Balaram's cart. I could tell Jayananda wanted to immediately get to work, so I told him I would accept the terms, although I couldn't possibly do the job on my own. We didn't discuss it long because the sun was setting over west bank of the Hudson River and the carts were scheduled to be moved by the intersection to the intersection of 5th Avenue and 60th Street at 6 a.m. the next morning before the city awoke. That was where we left it. Jayananda endorsed our agreement with a sobering, Hari Bol, good luck, as he ran off to tend to these tasks which lay ahead of him. He called back, "I will pray that Lord Jagannath gives you the intelligence to succeed, Prabhu." Plan C. Episode 9, Plan C. I took a deep breath and went back to Balaram's cart, immediately realizing that the first order of business was to figure out where I could get some help. I knew I couldn't possibly do everything that needed to be done myself. I needed a team of volunteers that would be willing to work with me, perhaps all night long. Devotees from Washington, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Boston, and even further destinations had begun to arrive for the parade scheduled the next morning. They were just curious to see the historic carts Jayananda had built, and they were streaming onto the Roth construction site. The main second square piece of tubing steel, an essential component required for the second stage of the canopy telescope, was helplessly twisted and mangled way beyond repair. It appeared like we had indeed hit an unpassable roadblock. A simple review of the linear formula we were now confronted with pointed to the unfortunate fact that our wishful thinking had come to an abrupt halt. No tubular steel, no telescope. No telescope, no canopy. No canopy, no Balaram's cart. Ugh. It was after 5 p.m. on Saturday night. I envisioned calling someone to open up their shop so we could purchase a new piece of tubular steel. My heart sank because I knew that this was pretty unlikely. Someone in Manhattan at 7 p.m. on a Saturday night would be sitting around in a big steel supply warehouse ready to sell us what we needed. I sought out Jayananda, who was like a commando running between Jagannath's cart and Subhadra's cart, getting everything ready for the parade the next day. By then, he had solved the problem of how to minimize the risk of having the other carts also topple over. He was directing his crew not to raise the canopy all the way up. "Only extend the second stage of the telescope 5 feet," he was instructing the cart crews. Jayananda was making adjustments at the last minute. "If you extend the second stage the full 10 feet, it could also crash down like Balaram's cart." He was making marks on the ropes and going over the new procedures with the crew when I approached him, frantically saying, "Jayananda, we need to get another piece of steel. Otherwise, we can't fix Balaram's cart. The telescope is too badly mangled. Where do we need to go? I will take the truck. Give me directions." Episode 10, Wishful Thinking. Jayananda turned to me and said, "You have to be dreaming. The place we got the steel from is all the way out in Brooklyn, and it's closed now." Then he paused. "I told you, Balaram's cart was out. I appreciate your efforts, but we can't get another piece of steel. Not at this time. It's too late." I was tenacious. I just didn't want to give in to failure. So I asked if we could call the guy who owns the shop and see if he would open the store and sell us the steel tubing we needed. After all, I was thinking, this is Lord Balaram's cart. And we're talking about this is Lord Balaram's cart we were talking about. And he needs a quick repair job done on his chariot by tomorrow morning. Certainly the guy in Brooklyn would appreciate that. I could tell by the look on Jayananda's face that he was exhausted, and he was still very concerned about getting the other carts ready by 6 a.m. the next morning. "No," he said, "that's not going to happen. We can't get another piece of steel this late in the day. Everything is closed. We are done. Let the other Prabhus go back to the temple, and you can help us on the two good carts." Again, my heart sank. I wanted to suggest using the topless cart, just as it was again, but I knew that Jayananda would not agree to that. And if I brought it up a second time, it would just waste more of a very limited, precious time that we had left. So I turned to go tell my very short-lived and fired-up crew that we had met defeat, and we could not proceed without the critical missing part. I was bummed out. I knew we could do it if we had the steel tubing, but there was no way we could get another one in time to complete the work by 6 a.m. the next morning. The New York traffic at 7 p.m. on Saturday night was impossible, and the store was way off in Brooklyn, and it was closed. I sadly had to conclude what Jayananda had said all along. We are done. Balaram's cart is out. I was saddened, and I wasn't feeling good about the announcement I had to make to my fledgling crew. I went back to explain all of this to my enthusiastic but now disappointed team of last-minute volunteers. The reality of defeat had set in. Everyone thought we had failed to achieve the desired outcome. I thanked everyone for their willingness to try and tried to be upbeat about the fact that we would still have two-cart parade the next day. But I could see that none of us was happy with that resignation. I was starting to feel the mood of defeat that Jayananda was repeatedly bouncing back from, or I should say rapidly bouncing back from. Episode 11, Balaram's Triumph Over Vayu. After I dispatched the bad news, I saw Jayananda approaching our little huddle. I figured he also wanted to thank these devotees and perhaps amalgamate my emergency crew into his completion efforts. So I waited for him to approach before releasing everyone to go back to the temple. Jayananda looked different. His walk had a more cheerful bounce in it, and he appeared to have a conservatively radiant demeanor of hope in his facial expression. He was waving his arms back and forth in a peculiar way to obviously get my attention. When he got in our presence, he spoke, "Mahesh, hey Prabhu, what part exactly did you need?" He wanted clarification on just what piece of steel it was that I needed to replace. I took him over to the twisted piece of steel tubing, which was originally straight, but now looked like one of those crazy straws that kids love to drink from. He then said, "You know, I'm not sure, but did you check way down on the end of the train loading dock? I think we purchased an extra piece of steel that was the very same steel extrusion several months ago. It may still be sitting there. Go check." Could it be? Anandaki, Bhaskar, and myself went frantically running to where he indicated the square pipe might be. And sure enough, just as if Lord Balaram had planned it all along, there was the exact piece of replacement steel that we needed to fix the canopy. We all let out a hari bol, Jai Jagannath, and we started jumping around like a bunch of kids. We came triumphantly running back with the coveted Roth part, and all the volunteers on the midnight repair crew threw themselves back into the mood of heave-ho. We would prevail. Lord Balaram would not be held in checkmate by Lord Vayu. To the credit of all the surrendered souls, we worked all through the night. As we got portions done, I would send devotees back to the temple. A few left at midnight and a few more at around 2 a.m. We were approaching daybreak. As we approached daybreak, the big blue temple sail was back up. The telescope had been calibrated to not go up all the way, and we raised Balaram's canopy top for the second time. Jayananda was practically crying with enthusiastic symptoms, and that in itself also made me weak with emotional ecstasy. He kept saying he couldn't believe it. He was beaming. He was so very happy. The parade would go on just as they had planned it for so many months. He was falling all over us with much more praise than was appropriate, but that was the way Jayananda was. I could feel his soul reaching out to me and the crew, which had stayed all night with oceans of gratitude. He wanted to please Srila Prabhupada, who wanted to please Lord Balaram. We all wanted to do that. And we also wanted to please Jayananda, because he was the embodiment of hard work, leadership, and setting the example. And a very well-rounded, responsible, and likable devotee. Everyone loved to work with him, and he made everyone feel great about whatever little contribution a person would offer. So for those few moments on that morning, it was quite a thrill. We were all vibrating with feelings of triumph over Maya's distracting attempts to interfere. All the angst from the previous evening was dissipating with the darkness as the sun rose. It was going to be a historic moment for the people of New York after all. Lord Jagannath, his sister Subhadra, and brother Balaram would each be riding their own majestic chariot down what Srila Prabhupada referred to as the most important street in the world. It was going to be a great day. Episode 12, Vaikuntha in a Concrete Canyon. The temple had arranged for three vans to come to the carts at 5 on 5th Avenue at 6 a.m. We were exhausted, but we were ready. Jayananda wanted me to assist by coordinating the transport of Balaram's cart to the start of the parade, which I did while he and his crew supervised the dispatch of the other two carts. We finally got back to the temple at about 7 a.m. While we were going back to the temple, Jayananda continued to embrace my friendship in ways that made me feel like $1 million. He was like this tremendously lovable big brother, and it felt great to bask in his affection, his affectionate association. When we got to the temple, we rested for about 3 hours. He came and got me when it was time to return to the parade site, just before 11 a.m., when the parade was to begin. It was a beautiful day. Jayananda was ecstatic. While we got a short nap after a long night, the freshly painted bare carts had been magically transformed with all sorts of decorations that included flowers, garlands, flags, candy, and balloons of all shapes and sizes and colors. The Roth carts now looked like they had descended directly from Vaikuntha and mystically appeared in the midst of this cold concrete canyon of New York. Jayananda positioned himself in front of Jagannath's cart, and Jampavan was steering Balaram's cart from the ground, the way it was done back then in those days. I had been assigned to manage the overhauled canopy on top of Balaram's cart, and I felt I was so very blessed to be part of such a big, huge event. When the parade began, Jayananda danced with abandon in front of Lord Jagannath's cart while he steered it down Fifth Avenue. People peered out of the windows, which seemed to stretch past the top of the sky, and a photographer caught the moment, which was later immortalized on the cover of the June 1977 Back to Godhead magazine the following year. At 42nd Street, Srila Prabhupada was escorted to Subhadra's cart and got on his Vyasasan. The parade culminated with a huge reception in Washington Square Park, where His Divine Grace gave a wonderful lecture to the huge public gathering that had come to the festival. We had prevailed. All our hard work paid off. It was a wonderful feeling, and for at least that day, New York had been transformed into something very, very special. Episode 13, the story behind historic photos. This is where that paper that I just sent around, I don't know where they are, but hopefully everybody's had a chance to look at it. I'm just going to quickly explain. Yeah, there it is. There's one of them. Anyhow, if this is kind of a little techie talk, so if you're interested, you could look at these photos later. But it's interesting because if you look at the photos of the New York Rath Yatra, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Only a handful of individuals really know the full story of what happened the night before in the 1976 New York Rath Yatra parade. However, there is a photographic evidence that reveals the tale of this harrowing evening, which challenged our resolve and bonded our spirits. Jayananda's triumphant mood was eloquently captured in a photo on the June 1977 issue of Back to Godhead, as mentioned above. On page 8 of that same issue, there is a small photo of the three carts as they proceeded down Fifth Avenue. If one looks closely, they will see that the canopies on Jagannath's and Balaram's cart are not fully raised. This is evident by the position of the rectangular-shaped design that is normally painted above and separate from the bottom shading panel, which extends over the deities. We can see the top rounded part of that design, but the bottom rectangular section can clearly be seen bleeding into the top of the shading panel. That's because the canopy was not lifted far enough for it to be visually set off on its own. The big cell-like blue tent could have been raised another 5 feet, but for safety's sake, that was not done. The photos taken on that day tell this story, this untold story, for those who look carefully for this detail. And then there's one final episode, which actually Ratnabhushana told me this. I was unaware of it, but it sounds very legitimate, so I included it into the ending of this. It's kind of a nice little ending to this tale. This is called The Unknown Observers, episode 14. Few people know this story behind the night before this important parade, but apparently there was an old retired husband and wife who had watched the entire drama. As the carts were being built and rose up from the dilapidated train station, they watched the daily progress from their apartment balcony. Every day they peered down across 11th Avenue to see the devotees toil on the three big chariots, a sight they had never seen before.